We're here.
What's up?
We're back once again. I'm here, Chris GDM. Excuse me, Grumpy Dungeon Master Christopher is also here. He's just a little on the weathered side today.
The funny part about it is that my wife and I went and saw Megadeth because she wanted to go see Megadeth. She's a metalhead.
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want to go see them? I sure as hell would.
Lambs of God, I think.
What? No S, but yes, mostly correct. Lamb of God.
Okay. And there were a couple other metal bands there that I don't remember. Something's over the V, like Ventriloquium or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. When we went there and we saw the show, we got COVID. So, yeah, that sucked. So, fast forward to this last weekend, we go, instead of doing our D&D stream, we go and take our daughter to a hockey game at the same arena. And then the very next day, we're both like heavy cold symptoms. And we're just looking at each other. It's like, we got COVID again by going to that stupid arena.
It's cursed.
We're never going back. we tested. It's not COVID, but it's kicking our ass.
You got something, the flu or a cold or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, large groups of people have that thing. Yeah, you know, that's just something that happens.
That's why you stay at home and invite over like 4 to 5 friends and just roll dice.
Yeah, 4 to 5 friends who have not been at any of those large locations.
Because why would they ever want to go?
Yep, because you're just going to end up with the con crud.
Yep.
Yeah. I always want to go to conventions and things, and then I never do. And then like half of the people I know that go are like, con crud is a real thing. We're all sick.
See, I never caught, whenever I went to conventions when I was like in my 30s and 20s, I never got sick. I never got sick at all until I had a child. And now I get sick all the time. Children.
That's because children are literally just made of germs. Yeah, they're just a giant germ factory.
Yeah. Oh, so I'm here and I'll do my best. If you hear some coughing, I apologize in advance. We'll do our best.
Yep. I'll edit if it gets too terrible, maybe.
My vanilla spice chai tea is amazing and it helps a lot.
That actually doesn't sound too bad right now.
Oh, it's delicious.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't have any here and I'm not going to the store to get any.
When you just get some tea, you put in vanilla spice. And then some chai, whatever that is.
Right. Yeah, whatever that is.
I just bought a tea bag that say special words and cost 4 times as much as that giant Lipton thing our parents bought.
Yep.
I came with little porcelain figures that are great D&D miniatures.
Yeah, I generally am not a big fan of chai tea, but yeah, it's occasionally it's nice. Now you throw in a vanilla flavoring. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it's really good.
But this is not a tea podcast.
Yes, this is. What kind of tea do they drink in the Faerun? What kind of tea do they drink in your games? Because it is pretty much like the main commodity drink next to wine or beer.
You know, that's something, and I know there's going to be, there's definitely info out there on that. But that should be just sort of a staple of when they release a campaign setting, which they don't actually do anymore. But for any game, I don't care what the game is. When you release a campaign setting, you should have, when you're detailing out locations, kind of what, you know, what local foods are common that the populace eats, what types of, you know, drinks they like in those areas. Like, these would be really useful little things to have for a DM to just sort of have in front of them when detailing out places.
I mean, to kind of hit on thing from last week with the Fae book that I got, you know, Ed Greenwood has their dietary plan in there, you know, and stuff that he made. So, I mean, that's really cool. Like, that stuff definitely adds character, but I can definitely see why they wouldn't add that to the printer. Because that costs a lot of money. That's definitely a DM's Guild kind of book.
You say that, but there are books that were printed in earlier editions that have that stuff.
Yeah, but you also got to remember, too, at that time, they were like, oh, we need more material for this book. What are we going to add? Ugh.
I don't know why they're not still doing that.
Well, because I would guess that, you know, player feedback has shown that not a lot of people use things like that.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation. Just kind of looking at D&D specifically, you're trying to sell as many books as possible. That's their goal. You know, ignoring all the other merchandising and everything else, it's a tabletop game, so you want to sell as many books as possible. All right. If you're just releasing pure lore books, the only people who are going to buy those are the Dungeon Masters. And there's a very kind of limited amount of those. You know, if you could assume maybe 1/4 of all people associated with D&D are DMs. So you're kind of kicking yourself in the teeth on that if that's what you're trying to do. So releasing pure lore books, I understand, is not exactly the most profitable thing to do. But they can always do what they did with third edition. And I don't know why they're not. In third edition, it was very common to have a lore, like a massive lore book. I got a half dozen of them or more just sitting on my shelf that are primarily lore books. But in every single one of them, there are more spells, there are more feats, and there are prestige classes, which I guess are archetypes nowadays. And those were thrown in those books specifically so that players would also buy them. And like, they could easily do something with fifth edition like that. Add in, you know, every single book that you drop, throw in 4 archetypes, 2 dozen more spells, and, you know, some feats that you'd be interested in using.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is just going to become digital and move online, because I mean, like, if you look at D&D Beyond, and I know people don't go there on a regular basis, but they actually have a lot of really good columnists right now that are doing really good things with, like, oh, you want to add some more character to your characters? Well, here's 15 foods they may like, or here's a bunch of character traits you can give your person that's not like standard character traits. So there are things out there, but it's all mostly digital now and blogs and,
yep,
you know, the D&D shorts guy, you know, doing his TikTok videos about, you know, like the peasant railgun and shit, you know, and that's kind of where I think it all kind of resides now.
You're not wrong. Like, everything I mentioned, I can find digitally. Like, it's not, there's no question about that. If I want to know what they eat in Thay, or fucking Shadowdale, I can just Google it. You know, there's no issue there, but that's not what, I don't know. But that's not what I want. I want physical books. I like books. I'm old like that.
Well, I mean, they can also just start adding in more, like the Dritz book that I got, you know, that kind of like said all these stuff about Faerun. Okay, well, just do one for the Underdark and do one for Thay, and, you know, and kind of like bring it in. You can't price point it like at $70, but $30, I'd buy it, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. 30 bucks, or even maybe as high as 40 are good, doable numbers. You start getting higher than that, and maybe not, but or you could even do the like paperback versions of them at $25-$30 a piece.
Yeah.
Like I've been digging through the Legend of the Five Rings, and 90% of the books that I own or more are all paperback, you know?
Yeah.
You know, they're sure they're older, but even then the price point was $25. So,
yeah, there's things, and they got to not be lazy.
Yep.
I mean, like, even if you look at Magic the Gathering and the fact that they stopped publishing novels for Magic the Gathering.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a couple of them because they came with the box sets, the Fat Packs. The Fat Packs cost $300 now.
Yeah, I have a couple of the Magic the Gathering floating around.
But now all the story is online on the Magic the Gathering blog, you know, for every new set, you know, so.
Yep.
It's just, I think that medium, unfortunately, has kind of run its course, and this is the best it can offer right now.
You say that, but at the same time, yeah, with what I do, I am a reseller, and I do sell a lot of Dungeons & Dragons novels. I will go out and buy up a trilogy that I find at a local used bookstore for $2 or $3, and then turn around and sell it for $30 or $40 very quickly, because people want those books.
Yeah.
And, like, if they were still releasing them, people would still be buying them.
Yeah. I mean, the Warhammer books are doing a killing. Oh, but that's Warhammer. Yeah,
I sell a ton of those novels, too. I sell, like, Shadowrun, pretty much anything tabletop related or, you know, related to the genre that we're into, people want them.
Yeah.
Like, there's a massive secondary market for this stuff.
So, speaking of D&D merchandise and D&D things, okay? There's so much shit right now for D&D because of this movie. They are going in hard on making sure people know that D&D exists and that shit's ready to sell.
Yeah.
I'm seeing commercials everywhere for, you know, the movie, of course. I'm getting inundated with a bunch of just ads and stuff for the D&D movie and for the D&D toy lines. Even toy reviewers, you know, are bringing up the toys that they have recently. Like, I brought up the giant gargantuan black dragon that's in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are doing toy reviews on it and, like, comparing it to other miniatures. And, you know, it works as a miniature, you know.
Yeah.
But they may have jumped the shark on this.
I know where you're going with this.
Or I guess in D&D's case, jump the dragon.
Yeah.
I guess. Or jump the bullet. Or jump the, I don't know, mimic.
They jumped the gelatinous cube.
They jumped the gelatinous cube. Or jump the mimic. I like jump the mimic. Whichever.
Honestly, jump the bullet is probably the most accurate because it's a land shark.
It's a land shark, yeah.
Yeah.
I was browsing Reddit and I came across an Old Spice ad.
Yeah.
That was a Dungeons & Dragons brand Old Spice. It was a unique scent combination just for Dungeons & Dragons for the movie. And at that point in time, I was like, all right, breaks. This has got to end. This has got to stop. You can't have more of this. Not allowed.
Yeah, it smells, smells of troglodyte.
Smells of just Cheetos and Mountain Dew.
Actually, that's accurate. You're not wrong. So I actually saw a actual commercial. I'm pretty sure it was on YouTube, but it's an actual Dungeons and Dragons Lay's potato chip commercial. And it is the characters from the movie doing their scenes that are straight out of the movie, but they have CGI'd Lay's potato chip cans into them.
Oh, I have not seen that, but that sounds just dumb as hell.
Oh, yeah. It has. This is why I had always feared my hobby getting taken over by giant corporations, and now we're there. Now we are there. We have reached the pinnacle of what the fuckism, and everything Dungeons and Dragons is no longer cool.
It was never cool to begin with. Come on.
It was always outside of mainstream. To those involved in it, it was cool. But now it is cool. Now it is mainstream, which makes it lame. That's how this works. Everything mainstream is lame. Everything outside of mainstream is cool.
It was never cool.
No, well, the people involved weren't ever cool. Yeah, it's just too much. It's too much. I'm already over it.
I'm not over it. I'm just like,
I'm over the merchandising of it. I'm absolutely over the merchandising of it.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm not over the movie. As there have been now two weekends in a row where it was being shown, and we were not aware of it until after it was shown.
The best part is, too, is my local friends that play D&D heavily saw the movie but didn't tell me that there was that thing going on. So, what the hell, guys?
Yeah, seriously.
Let me know.
Like, if my D&D group had all gotten together and went to see it without even telling me it was out, I would have been mad. I would have killed I would have killed a couple of their characters for sure. Yeah, definitely would have been mad. We actually do have a group together to go see it this coming Friday evening. Which if you know me and going seeing movies, that's a damn miracle. I love seeing movies at the theaters, but I always go during the daytime. Like 100% of the time, I go during the daytime when there's nobody at the theaters. So getting me to go on opening night, yeah. But we've already got tickets, and we're going to go see it Friday, and then I'm supposed to go see it again Saturday with my family.
Well, you have family, huh?
Yeah, I have a brother and a mother. I have family.
I don't. Wait.
That's... What? I hope Shelley doesn't listen to this.
Yeah. I really hope the movie's good. It's got 90% of Rotten Tomatoes, and it seems like it's going to be pretty solid. I'm just kind of worried that people are going to see it and it's going to suck. I mean, but there have been two, you know, secret showings that no one's told me about, and everyone's loved it so far. So
if it's got it's got 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I think that's from the viewership, and then it was high 80s or low, like right in that same range from the actual reviewers.
Yeah.
So that's actually a really good sign if you get both of those coinciding at that high of a rating. Like it, and even just from watching the trailers, it just looks like a dumb, fun movie.
Yeah. It does look good. I really do hope that that it does really well. And I think that it will. I don't feel like it's gonna be bad or anything. And it's gonna be okay. I keep telling myself that. It's gonna be okay. Everyone's gonna love it. And
everything right now, all signs currently point to everyone enjoying the movie.
Yeah,
you can't really ask much more than that.
I know. I want it to do really well. I want people to enjoy it. I don't want it to be stupid, you know. So I'm cautiously optimistic right now.
You know, there's what we really and truly want, and then what we're going to get from Hollywood. What I really and truly want is I want a Dungeons and Dragons show. And I know they're making one, or they're supposed to be making one, assuming it didn't get canceled yet. But I want one that's...
I don't remember the status of the stupid...
And I want one that's very long and intricate and detailed with really good writing and really good plot, a la Game of Thrones, that does not end like Game of Thrones.
I don't know if Game of Thrones is the right...
It doesn't have to be that violent or that over the top. I'm just saying sort of...
No, it's not the right level of suspense. Like, you can't... Everyone wants D&D to be Lord of the Rings, but in reality, it's Monty Python.
Well, it's... The writing is very Lord of the Rings. The tabletop games are very Monty Python.
I think this movie is pretty much as close as you're going to get to a modern-day Three Stooges film.
Probably. I mean, all of the trailers just show a lot of comedy.
Yeah. But
a lot of comedy, lots of action. And that's modern Hollywood. That's kind of what we've all come to expect. But like 2 hours is not going to truly be enough. I want the full thing, which is why I want a show.
Yeah.
I need characters I can really get invested in and a show that I can really and truly sink my teeth into and enjoy. I watch a lot of shows, but most of them don't really and truly hold my interest. Like I really, really enjoyed Wednesday. I watched it like over 2 days. I burned through that one, and I really enjoyed the House of the Dragon. That was also really good. But as far as shows, that's about the only ones recently that have held my interest.
Yeah, there's more shows out there, man.
I know. I watch a lot of them, but some of them it takes me like 6 weeks to get through because I'm like, okay, I'll watch an episode here or there, and then, I'm looking for something to watch. All right, I guess I'll go back and watch some more of that show that was all right.
Yeah.
But Anyway.
So the second thing I had to discuss today.
What was the first thing?
Jumping the boulet moment.
I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Is kind of on the toys. I went shopping at Target and I dropped an unspecified amount of money because I don't want my wife to kill me. I bought the Dungeon Master and the villain from the cartoon show action figures.
Uh-huh.
Each come with their own die. And then I bought all the actual figures that they had for the show, which are only three of them. The Barbarian, the Acrobat, and the Archer. And they were all really cool. I've seen them. You can pose them pretty well. They got a lot of articulation. And then they had also all the dice links. So now I was only going to buy the Beholder, because that's all I really wanted was the Beholder. I like having lots of Beholders.
Yeah.
But they were all there, and there was every single one. So I was like, you know what? Whatever. And I bought them all.
Can you just buy a box set that has all four in it, or do you have to buy them all individually?
You got to buy them all individually. So the fact that they were all there and I could complete it in that one transaction, that's what I did. So I bought them all. I have no idea if I should even take them out of the box or should, you know, do anything with them. I don't know what to do. I got so much stuff I got to put up. I need more shelving space in my house.
Yeah. I hate to say it. You need to expand the size of your hobby room.
Take over the garage.
Yeah, take over the garage, or just all take the living room and, you know, turn your little side room into the living room, and now the living room is your hobby room.
It doesn't work that way when you have a wife and child.
Yeah, I know. garage it is.
I found a new pop figure that was a gelatinous cube fall convention thing. So I bought that on the spot and added that to the D&D pops that I have that are on my mantel place, which infuriates my wife, but she hasn't thrown them away yet, so I guess it's okay.
That's the one thing, the sort of overflow into public space.
Yeah, that and the kitchen table is kind of covered in my minis right now because I keep doing that stuff for TikTok. I may do all the mini stuff and put them up on TikTok, so I may still do that.
Yeah. Busting open the toys, throwing it on TikTok seems good to me. For those who actually use TikTok, since it currently is
mostly
not banned,
everybody,
which it currently is not banned, currently
mostly everybody.
Yeah, I have a couple of friends who use it. So, and by couple, I mean more than a couple.
So, the third thing I want to talk about.
Okay,
and this is. A meme I saw on Reddit. Who would win in a fight? An F-35 jet, or whatever it's called, or a Red Dragon, adult Red Dragon.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was neat because I took it seriously in my head. I was like, all right, let's look up stats for the F-35 fighter jet. What can it do? And then immediately I saw that, like, it can't fly near electrical storms because the fuel, like, becomes inert and doesn't work.
Okay.
So, it's the Dragon. The Dragon wins. Period.
No.
Because if it's a blue Dragon...
No. See, now you're changing it.
No, I'm just saying, if it's a blue Dragon, the blue Dragon's immediately going to win. You know? And who... If a thunderstorm takes out an F-35 Raptor, what's the Weave going to do to it? And then the next question was, is like, okay, so what world are we fighting in? Did the jet get teleported into Faerun? Because if it did, none of its navigational systems, which are actually mostly self-contained to the plane, won't work because it needs all of our satellites. So if the Dragon came to our world, at least it would have all that tech. But then there's never been any combat with the F-35, so they can't actually say how well it does in combat versus other flying aerial vehicles. That's the F-22 Raptor. Now, if it's the F-22 Raptor versus an adult Red Dragon, I'm going to give it to the Raptor every single day.
Okay, wait, what was the airplane that was fighting it, the Red Dragon initially?
An F-35.
F-35, okay. Yeah, okay, here's why there's not a chance in hell...
F-35 Lightning II.
Here's why there's not a chance in hell of any dragon ever beating one of the an F-35, because a Dragon's top flying speed is what, 120 feet around or something like that.
Yeah.
We'll be really generous. We'll say it can go 200 feet every 6 seconds. The F-35 is 1,200 miles per hour.
Yeah, but it's more a question of will the weaponry take it down. And it's got missiles and machine guns.
The range of a Dragon's Breath at most, I don't have it in front of me, would be 300 feet. I don't even need to look up the F-35 to tell you that a missile is way more than 300 feet.
But here's the thing, is that they're not magical weapons, right?
So
all the damage that the Raptor is going to do, or sorry, the Lightning is going to do, is going to be half damage. So how much damage is a bullet from an F-35 Lightning actually do to a Dragon?
Well, a standard gun in quote unquote D20 is 1d6 for one bullet. Now, how many?
Two damage.
Okay. So now, how many bullets does the machine guns put out per 6 seconds?
Well, remember, it has limited ammo. So let's give it 1,000 rounds, which would probably be a lot.
All right. F-35 machine gun. I don't know what they're called, unfortunately. So it's hard to look this up. If I had known we were going to be talking about this ahead of time, I could have actually put together a much more solid argument. let's see. M61, maybe?
All right, so it has...
Okay, so it has a Vulcan machine gun, M61 Vulcan rate of fire, 6,000 rounds per minute.
Okay, but that's pretty much, it has 1 minute's worth of ammo.
Yeah, okay, 6,000 rounds per minute, and you give it 1,000 rounds. That's,
well, let's give it 6,000 rounds. I'm sure it has a minute worth of firing time.
Okay, you do the math. I'm not doing that math. How many rounds is that in 6 seconds? What is that, 60? 600, I think that's 600 rounds at 1d6 per.
So two, just make it easy. Say it's two damage per bullet.
Yeah. So that's 1200 damage.
If all of them hit,
let's assume rates of hitting are 1 in 4. You're still looking at 200 damage from way outside of this Dragon's range. This isn't even close. So long as the physics and the mechanics work, like, this is not even a fight. That's just with the machine guns. That's not even including the rockets that are firing at the same time.
So that's why I brought it up. That's why I said the F-22 would absolutely win, but the F-35, I don't know if it would, because I don't know how the weave would affect it. If it has such high technology built into it, and it needs all these satellites and shit to actually work and function properly, and it's flying through the weave, which is just pretty much existing in Faerun, who knows how technology is really going to work.
Well, there. Okay, now are we including Acquisitions Incorporated as being canon?
They have their own fucking book, and they are canon on the Waterdeep Council.
Okay, so they are canon, therefore man, like, our time technology does work in Faerun as intended. I was watching a stream of them yesterday, and there's a gnome that was being run, not by, it was by Jeremy Crawford, was playing his gnome who has a fucking cell phone that works in Faerun.
Well, that's a Faerun cell phone, though. It was built in Faerun.
Yeah, it's a cell phone, man.
No, it's like saying, like, you know, Darth Vader can come to Earth and use the Force. He can't. We don't have midichlorians, so.
This is the dumbest argument we've had all week. I love it.
Look, I'm F-35 is questionable. The F-22 Raptor, definitely hands down. That thing can pretty much just fight its way through anything that exists.
It's the F-35 is not questionable as long as the technology works.
I don't think it will.
What makes you think the F-22 would work and the F-35 wouldn't?
Because the F-22 is basically...
Is magic?
No, the F-22 is basically put together by sheer willpower, spit, bubble gum, and duct tape at this point in time.
So it's like Warhammer orcs. Building. Okay. All right. That's fair.
Where the F-35 is like, oh, we have the most lethal survivable technology ever. We can pinpoint you from 1,000 miles away and shoot you. It's like, that's great. That's great, Snowflake. Whatever. Yeah. Go ahead and shoot us. Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. So maybe the plane itself.
Oh, my God. Look, it's raining outside. Looks like you can't do shit.
Maybe the plane itself for the F-35 might not work, but the machine gun is just physics. It should work just fine.
Yeah. You give anything a Vulcan machine gun and they win.
Yeah. Yep.
Like even a Vulcan machine gun in Star Wars is pretty much nigh unstoppable.
I don't know. Jedi's were the Jedi's did
they
run away.
They can't block bullets. That's the whole point of slug throwers. You can fight Jedi with slug throwers because
that's fair.
Parry them and it like blah, molten my face.
I know the droidicars. They had the blaster machine. The fucking God, what do they call them? The Gatling gun blasters. But yeah. But that's blasters. It's not slug throwers. So, yeah. My money's
those
still...
are all my topics for this week.
Oh, that's fine. I got a couple of
so topics. My fourth topic was...
You son of a bitch.
Yeah, I know. I almost completed all the Spelljammer run through. I got one more week left, and, you know, as long as I'm feeling good, I'll go in and do it. Essentially, like the last three parts of the last chapter are all like a lot of political intrigue and like upheaval and whatnot. There's not very many combat situations at all.
Yeah.
Except for like the end fight. And Avengers League really doesn't work very well with a lot of political stuff. So it's kind of sad that I can't really do that. So I'm doing the whole, all right, you guys go right to the last spot. The prince is being coordinated. You got to stop him. And just going to like the last part of the last chapter.
Right.
And it's pretty good. We TPK'd though this week. It was unfortunate. It was a battle of attrition that they lost. So what happens is you go to this like Jabba the Hutt style blue giant in space. They're called, his name is Vokath, and they're called like a Mirin or something like that. Okay. Can't remember off the top of my head. And you're supposed to basically, you know, work with him because he has ties to all these other like groups in Doomspace, and you're supposed to get his favor and basically like set up conversations with everybody so you can convince all everyone to come help you and raid the guy's base and Doomspace and save the world kind of thing. And he's like, okay, well, I'll do that, but first you gotta go fight in my arena and kill all my monsters. And it's a really cool arena, but the problem is it's like any other gladiator arena. You're gonna lose. It's too hard. There's so many things. It's nonstop back-to-back fights, so there's no short rest in between. They had just had a long rest, so they were fresh.
Yeah.
But it still was just not enough to get through all the fighting. The first fight was like two kind of like ogres. Let me find the actual.
What level are the characters?
They were 7 at the time.
Okay. So they've got a little bit of ass behind them.
Yeah. So the arena battles, it started off with Thrasher and Gnasher, who are two Borogs, which are just huge giants, forearm giants. I only had 2 players this week because we've had a little low attendance recently.
Oh, well, shit, you had 2 players and you're doing this.
So what I did is I gave them 2 NPCs of higher CR rating than the monsters that they were fighting. Mm-hmm. Okay. I gave one like Astro Elf Priest, who's like a CR 8, and a Gif Battlemaster, which is like a CR 10. Mm-hmm. All right. So I was like, okay, you're going to play these characters too and just kind of like, you know, pinch it because the attendance was a little low that week.
Yeah.
The Gift Battlemaster got grabbed immediately and killed in 1 round.
whoa, what the hell?
And I was like,
what the hell killed
him? What the hell killed him?
Like a CR-10
died to CR-6. Yeah. So what the Bo'Rog is supposed to do is it's forearmed. It's like Goro. Okay. Yeah. So he picks you up and then basically just punches you in the face. Right. Okay. So it's a dex check to not get grabbed. And it's a bit gift battle master. And guess what they're really bad at?
Yeah. Dex.
Dex check. So he gets picked up. Now he doesn't take damage until the start of his first or his next turn. Okay. Where then he takes 49. That's the average damage as he's wrecked basically by the forearms. So being the smart battle master that I was, and these guys are, you know, two Bo'Rogs fighting side by side in an arena. Okay, I have this one grappled. Come punch it for me a few times. Well, it gets four fist attacks. So the other dude walks over and like punches it all four times. One of them was a crit, average of 12 damage.
Huh. I mean, I still would have expected it to survive, but
well, it only had like 96 hit points.
Oh, only. That's a lot of hit and points.
So, yeah, so it took a crap ton of damage, and then it got rended, and it got torn to four pieces and was dead immediately. So, but the rest of the fight, the players just mopped the floor with these guys. They just kind of stayed away from them and shot them to death. You know?
Yep.
So, the next fight was Brutus the Braxit. Now, if you don't know what a Braxit is...
I don't.
It is a giant bipedal rhino made of stone.
Okay, so kind of like a D&D Gorgon.
Kind of, yeah. It's awesome. Basically, they're super highly intelligent, alright? Their armor class includes, like, their AC actually includes their intelligence modifier. They have plus 2 to int. So they're fairly smart when it comes to monsters, okay? All right. They can basically cast shield on themselves as a reaction 3 times a day, and they swing a great club. All right. Average of 21 damage. Okay. They can also basically cast compulsion and fear, and they have an acid breath attack.
Okay, that's kind of rough. Honestly, it wouldn't be too bad, but throwing 3 shields per day into it makes that kind of suck.
Well, luckily for them, without them knowing, they disabled reactions on the monster. Because one of them had some kind of pet, and it does some kind of weird dex thing, and its dex sucks. And because it got hit by this weird thing, it had no reactions, and I could not use that psionic shield at all. It already has an 18 AC, and they were barely hitting it, but yeah, they were hitting it. So it actually died, not before, you know, I brought in another NPC to substitute for the dead one. And then the final fight, I bought a new mini for this one. I bought
the Black Dragon.
No, it wasn't the Black Dragon. The mini is actually from Ravenloft, and it's not the correct mini for the fight, but the mini from Ravenloft is called Grave Drinker. It's a gargantuan albino purple worm.
Oh, okay? You did not let a bunch of kind of already beaten up level 7s fight a purple worm.
No, I just use it as the model.
Okay.
And I got a good deal on it, so I bought it because, you know, shop your local LGS's, energy-gamers.com. Code word grumpy, get 10% off. Anyways, so the final thing is they had to fight a 100-foot-long megapede named Queen Gorma.
And sounds way worse.
It is way worse than a purple worm. So the megapede, all right, it gets one bite attack and then either life drain or psychic bomb per turn. Life drain is the megapede magically drains life energy from other creatures nearby. Each creature within 15 feet of the megapede must make a DC 15 con save or take 16 necrotic damage, half as much, or 3d10 necrotic damage on a failed save or half as much on a successful one. So that's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
The psychic bomb targets one creature within 60 feet, DC 15 wisdom saving throw. On a failed save, target takes 5d8 psychic damage, is incapacitated until the start of the next turn. Successful save, half as much, and isn't incapacitated. So, that gargantuan albino purple worm, cool mini. I needed a reason to buy it. And this was the best reason I had, so I bought it.
You bought it so you could TPK a party.
That's not when they TPK'd.
Okay.
They actually beat the crap out of this one, too.
All right.
Just utterly stomped its shit in. Like, it was sad how fast they killed this thing.
I've been there. You don't even have to explain it.
So essentially what they did is, you know, there were a couple newer players to the thing, but they had a clockwork sorcerer. And he was able to kind of figure out this, like, okay, well, if I incapacitate it, all I can do is move, right?
Yep.
And as long as you guys don't hit it, it's not going to get its turn. And the way the initiative was set up, he basically incapacitated it, okay, because its wisdom save was super low. Well, he didn't know that, but he kept failing it. So it'd be incapacitated. Everyone would just hold their turn, wait for the Mechapede to kind of, like, move around a little bit, because that's all it could do, because it's incapacitated.
Right. Wait until after its turn, take all their shots, and then just do it, rinse, repeat.
And then he did it again. So they just beat the crap out of this Mechapede. Well, that's, I was quite impressed.
It's smart using the mechanics of the game for that, yeah.
So that's where we ended the next that session. The following session, the prince on his dragon shows up. All right. And essentially he makes his big entrance and he says that I'm going to kill you all unless you hand over my sister. The sister volunteers herself for sacrifice along the promise basically to not kill everybody. And he basically takes her and flies away. Being Avengers League, there's a little thing in here where it basically says if he wants to basically be a dick, he'll leave behind enemies for them to fight. Okay?
Yeah.
So I left behind enemies for them to fight. And it was 8 Astro Elves. Okay? These guys have about 50 hit points apiece. All right? They have +3 to hit. Okay, we have long swords and long bows, and that's really it. And they can use Misty Step once per combat.
Got it. So nothing to worry about.
Yeah, and that's when it TPK'd.
How many were there?
8.
Oh, that's a lot. That
8 versus 4. Yeah. So they opened up with a bunch of AoEs and took them all down to like half life almost immediately, but they didn't like focus them down. Mm-hmm. They kind of spread their damage around to everybody.
Yeah, can't do that. Gotta start burning through them. Yep.
And the thing is that the Astro Elves, they can never hit you. But when they hit you, it hurts because it's 1d8 plus 3d6 radiant.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot
of damage.
That's a lot of damage.
I crit like 4 times in that fight.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I roll right in front of everybody so everyone can see my rolls. So I don't fudge shit. Sometimes I forget to add modifiers to attacks.
Yeah.
You know, to make sure they miss, you know.
Yeah, that's a lot of damage. I know +3 to hit against 7th level PCs isn't a ton.
But when you crit,
yeah,
and it's 1d8 plus 66.
Yep. I mean, that's going to kill a 7th level in about 2. If you crit twice, that'll drop just about anybody at that level.
And so this is what I did. So the fight started, and they came rushing out. They surrounded the barbarian, who had yet to act, so his rage was not going.
Yep.
Not like his rage stops radiant damage. He was crit hit off of 4 monsters. Remember that it was crit hit off of 4 monsters to get 2 attacks each.
Yeah.
So they missed a majority of it, and I got lucky with the crits. So the barbarian went down immediately. And they had no healers this time, unfortunately. Well, the healer, I think, was Tap, because this fight happens right after the fight of the giant Mechapede.
Yep.
So, there was no healing anywhere. He died. So, one of the NPCs that I had replaced the GIF was a Vampire Captain. The Vampire Captain is pretty decent, but he's fairly weak in the stats. So, I actually gave them the Vampire stat block to use instead. So they were actually playing a vampire, and I was like, you know what? Your guy went down. If you want to use the action on your turn to create a vampire thrall and turn your barbarian into a vampire, I'll let you do that. Bring your character back. So he's like, absolutely, I do. So he rolls up a brand new character through D&D Beyond that's a reborn kobold barbarian. Okay. And he gets right back into the action, just killing and killing and slaughtering and whatnot. Eventually, though, I killed the caster of the group, and then I killed the vampire captain, and then I eventually kill the clockwork sorcerer. He actually did something smart. He came in real close to the archers. Okay, and I was like, okay, that's pretty smart.
Yeah, give him disadvantage.
Right. But then at the end of his turn, he hopped away.
Ah.
And I was just like, and so they shot him. He's like, I'm new and that's on me. I need to learn not to do that in the future. So, and then I got the barbarian down again. And the barbarian, now that he has advantage on his death saves, came back. You know, was unconscious for a while, and he survived. So he's basically going to lead the fleet into the final area of the game and fight it out.
Yeah.
So I try to save it as best I could. Unfortunately, unbeknownst to them, and I know the person who's the barbarian doesn't listen to the podcast. At least I believe he doesn't. Without the vampire captain, they don't have a sacrifice to complete the story. Because the captain, if none of the players sacrifice themselves, will sacrifice himself willingly in place of the players so they can go home. He's already dead. He's already lived out plenty of lifetimes, and he hates these guys, these Astro Elves. So he's more than willing to kill himself to basically ruin all their plans.
Say, so just swing by some planet, just pick up some rando.
Just pick up some rando. That was actually the gift that got quartered in the arena earlier. He's the rando. I have a couple ideas. I may use my favorite character, the Commodore Crux.
You mean Commodore Sacrificed?
Commodore Sacrifice. Pretty much my role when we go LARPing. We need to sacrifice to open up the boss door. Get Thaldred. Okay. Yeah.
Dread, get up there.
I've died more to being sacrificed to horrible things than I have in any other way. And heck, you're talking about sacrificing one of our other teammates, and I was like, nah, just sacrifice me instead. It's weird if anyone else if it happens to anyone else.
I got this. I've been here, done this a few times. Oh man. So I was hanging out with
my fifth thing.
No. Yeah. I mean, we're already an hour into this thing. I haven't even started. Shit. I haven't talked about a single.
You're supposed to do all the talking.
I know. That's what you told me before we started this thing, and I'm like, well, I'm gonna start talking, and then nope, it's on number four. Four all things. Five things. 17 thing. All right. So I was hanging out with my buddy Mike this week. We were playing BattleTech, the miniatures game, and we got to chatting about miniature gaming in general, which. As happens often, it sends me down a rabbit hole because I want to know the history of everything. So we all know that Dungeons & Dragons actually spawned out of chainmail and basically Gary Gygax and his group of miniature wargamers back in the 70s. And I knew that miniature wargaming was fairly old. Like I was familiar with it at least in the 1800s. Existing in the 1800s and chess prior to that and Go and so forth. So I started digging into the actual history of modern wargaming as it is. And 1880s, apparently Robert Louis Stevenson was the guy kind of responsible for miniature wargaming. And for anyone who doesn't know who Robert Louis Stevenson is, he's the guy who wrote Treasure Island. He's the guy who wrote Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So very, very famous author.
I knew who he was.
Yeah. Well, now you absolutely do. I expected you knew who he was, but I don't know that all our listeners do.
I can't remember people's names. The only author's name I know of right now is J.R.R. Tolkien and Michael Crichton.
Oh, okay. Well, do you know who H.G. Wells is?
He was an author?
Yes, H.G. Wells. Very, very famous guy.
No, not really.
Okay, well, he wrote a lot of books. Wrote a lot of stories.
Do I know any?
Yeah, let's see. The Time Machine, War of the Worlds, Island of Dr. Moreau, The Invisible Man. Ever heard of any of those?
That was a terrible movie.
Which one?
Isle of Dr. Moreau.
You're talking about the one from in the 90s with Val Kilmer? Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
That was pretty bad.
Yeah.
But anyway, he wrote all of those. So Robert Louis Stevenson, he actually used to do miniature wargaming. He'd take chalk and like paint, draw places on his floor, and then move toy soldiers around, actually doing war games. A little later on, H.G. Wells is the one who actually wrote down rules for doing this. And there's a book out there that he put together from 1913 called Little Wars that I've never heard about. I really want to find a copy of this thing just to see what it was like. But apparently he would use whatever like wooden soldier toys were around, and they actually would set up terrain and things to sort of fill in for positioning and everything. And they would use measurements of either 1 foot or 2 foot for movement. And it would be kind of based upon the size of however big the toy soldier was as to how far they could move and what they could do. Like damage, there wasn't really a damage thing. It was just the larger soldiers. Like if you've got a 6-inch tall wooden toy soldier that runs into a group of 4-inch tall wood soldiers, the 6-inch one wins because it's just larger. So
it's like a bunch of nerds.
Yeah, I know, right? Who would imagine that authors would be nerds? But anyway, that's apparently the beginning of our, you know, little hobby. And I never would have thought that actual famous writers from the 1800s would be the ones responsible for it.
Isn't it like chess has just not speaking of miniature wargaming, but wasn't chess like invented by every culture in some way, shape, or form?
I don't know about every culture, but it's there.
Most.
There have been chess like games in a number of them. Chess itself, I think, is from the 1700s. Like, it's not super, super old, you know, 300 years or so. But Go, which is also a similar type thing, has been around for a couple thousand years, I think.
That's right.
Yeah, it's like wargaming's been around a long time, but miniatures wargaming, not since, you know, it was pretty much invented, and I guess. Outside of chess, the 1800s, late 1800s even, miniature wargaming didn't really start getting big till 1950s, mid-50s or so. Probably would have picked up a lot sooner than that, but, well, you know, two world wars kind of turned people off to war and metal prices. You know, getting a hold of lead can be kind of hard to make miniatures.
Yeah, if your miniatures aren't made of lead, I don't know what to do.
Well, back then, that's all they were made of was lead or, you know, wood.
Yeah, but your miniatures have to be made out of lead, or else, you know, what are you even playing?
I had lead miniatures. They were still making them out of lead in the 90s.
They're delicious.
Yeah, well, you're not supposed to eat those. Give you more brain damage. More.
More.
Because I know there's plenty already there, but give you more of it. So anyway, I love learning the history of our hobby, and that was a fascinating little piece for me to dive into.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of like I know dice have been found. Like,
oh yeah.
Forever. So they've had like some kind of game.
Yeah.
And like, I'm sure some time traveler has basically fallen back in time without anything, carved up some D20s. Like, hey, you want to play Monsters and Mazes? Monsters, yep. And Minotaurs? Minotaurs and Mirrodins?
Yeah. I'm not pretty sure. I'm almost positive that they found dice from ancient Rome. So yeah. You know, 2,000 years ago.
This is totally off topic, but did you see they figure out how Romans made concrete recently?
I know I saw that, but I don't remember the details on it.
Well, because Roman structures are still around, okay? Yes. And everyone's been like, oh, How are they still around? We don't know. Why is our concrete lasting forever when ours lasts for 50? And they knew like the formula or something to what they did, but it didn't make any sense until very recently they found out that it was the volcanic ash that they were adding to the concrete mix that they were using contained high like levels of lime.
Uh-huh.
And so when their concrete cracked, the lime mixture of their concrete would remelt when water got into the cracks and seal the cracks automatically.
Huh. Okay.
That's the short of it. Go find the real science explanation on the web. But
yeah,
that also explains to me how all these dumb fucking castles in D&D are still around after like 500 years of being abandoned and still standing somehow.
Yeah, they all just used, you know, things like
self-healing concrete. Yeah.
Yeah. Or,
I mean, Ravenloft is kept up by Strahd. That's just the Dracula myth.
Yeah.
You know, Dracula keeps his castle complete, and when Dracula dies, the castle goes away. That's just how that goes.
Yeah.
But now, why is Cragmaw Castle still around after being abandoned for 200 years? Limestone concrete.
Yep, lime.
Yep.
Never would have guessed that.
Nope. I mean, who would have even thought to research it?
Some nerd. Yeah, some nerd historian. Who's nerdier about it than I am, and actually probably works in some industry like that, whereas I don't. So.
I'm sure there's going to be some reason why it's not really good or something like that.
Oh, well. I was going to talk about Legend of the Five Rings this week, but I'm going to save that for next week since we're already at an hour.
We're going to talk about D&D movie next week, so I don't know what else we're going to talk about.
Well, I don't. Next week, talking about the D&D movie might be too soon. I like to give everyone at least 1 week with no spoilers, so we can talk about it.
You got the weekend.
We'll
the weekend.
Nope.
I'm coming here and scream like, Snails is still alive!
Snails! No! Best part of that movie. Best part. Not Snails himself, but watching Snails die.
Hey.
Yeah, it's funny that we were talking about it in group chat earlier about that movie and Damon R. and the fact that I actually own the sequel. I own the DVD of it, and I've still never watched it.
Yeah, and it was irritating because you found it when you were visiting me. I was like, shit, I really want that.
I haven't, and I've never seen another copy since then.
I've never seen a copy in my life.
Yeah, well, yeah, you have. You've seen the one I bought.
Well, the one you bought.
But yeah, if I ever see another copy, I'll buy you one and mail it to you.
Thanks.
Yep.
Thanks.
Along with all the other stuff I keep meaning to mail you.
Put it in my box of DVDs that I've yet to open.
Yeah, along with, what was the Tom Hanks one that I meant to send you?
Oh, yeah, that one too.
Yep. And the Tom Hanks D&D movie where he goes crazy and runs around in tunnels underground and shit.
He kills a kid, doesn't he?
That's right, Mazes and Monsters. No, I don't think he kills a kid. I've seen the movie I've seen it like a dozen times, but it's been more than a decade. I'm pretty sure he just goes sort of nutso.
Doesn't a kid fall in a pit that he makes full spikes?
Maybe. I got to watch it again. It's been a decade at least since I've seen it. It was on heavy rotation for about a week at the house I was living at the time. And after we showed it to every one of our friends that we cared about, we were like, okay, nobody ever watches this again. So we never played it again. All right. Well, that's it for this week, guys. Thanks for listening. We're going to get the hell out of here now.
Jump the boulet.
Bye, Craig. Bye, Chris. Bye.